it started in here.
It's that time of day. We don't know what we will say, but we'll say it anyway. And Samantha's here to push all our buttons. Headlines of the day. We'll be covering it all, okay.
Justice and Drew.
Justice and Drew
is on right now.
Justice and Drew
will be on till 9 o'clock.
Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be.
Wow! Would you look at that? And 103.5 FM. Good morning and welcome to your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew. I am Drew. That man over there.
Really upset that Oprah Winfrey is not going to be running for the Oval Office, but very impressed that David Gartenstein-Ross appears to be a prophet.
Is John Justice. In there pushing our buttons this morning and answering your phone calls at 651-995-8855 is Breanne. Doing a wonderful job filling in for Sam this week.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
There was a story this morning in light of the conversation we had with our counterterrorism experts about the defeat in ISIS, which the defeat of ISIS in Raqqa in Syria. Not downplaying that it is happening, but there's still a lot of work to be done. But the headline that's now emerged in that is with ISIS losses, Al Qaeda stands to rise. And so, David, when we talked to him earlier this week, which you can listen to if you download the iHeartRadio app and go to the Justice and Drew channel, had said basically that was going to be the case.
Is it odd that there's been sort of no credit given to the Trump administration for the success against ISIS? I mean, it is something. It's one of the few things.
Sure.
That he said he was going to do.
Well, we do have sample.
When he became president.
We do have sample border walls that have been created. So we're going to talk about
prototype walls.
Yeah. You know, it's like a color palette. You know, when you're trying to paint a room. Is it odd? Okay.
I mean, we're, you know.
Should there be? Yes. Is it odd that there isn't? No.
The biggest.
It's to be expected story, that there wouldn't be.
This is a huge deal.
Sure.
You know, on a global stage regarding foreign policy, this is a pretty huge deal. This fall of ISIS, that it's not completely wiped out, obviously. It's still going to exist, but they've taken major, major losses. And all anybody's talking about in the media is Trump's phone calls to Goldman.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that later on in the show, but I'm annoyed with that as well. I want to know where
I'm angry.
You're annoyed at on it.
I'm pretty angry.
Okay. All right. So the other thing, real quick, on the Oprah front, I guess she tweeted out something about someone wrote an article about why she should run, and she retweeted it. So all these people were like, Oprah's going to run for office, and then Oprah came out yesterday and said she wasn't going to run for the Oval Office. So that would have been kind of fun. So, but she wouldn't have gotten any attention with the headlines today. So why are you mad about it?
Well, a number of reasons. One, it's a completely fabricated controversy, right? But it's a fabricated controversy that Donald Trump sort of created for himself by bragging about how he calls all the Gold Star families, and no other president has ever done that. First of all, that's not true. Presidents have called Gold Star families. Presidents have called families of soldiers that have fallen in the line of duty for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
On, you know, Democrat, Republican, all presidents have done it, and it's the type of thing that should be done quietly. Shouldn't be talked about. Presidents shouldn't go and brag and talk about how they do it, because then that gives, especially if it's a Republican president, gives the media the excuse. Now the Washington Post is going out there and finding every Gold Star family that has lost a soul, every family that has lost a soldier in action since Trump became president, and finding out whether or not Trump called them so that they can start their whole database. Well, we interviewed 24 Gold Star families who have lost a service member since Trump became president, and Trump has only called 13 of them.
It's
and he opened that door. He opened that door.
Do you not believe that if he hadn't, do you believe that if he hadn't opened the door? Because honestly, I had, until you mentioned it just now, I was not aware, personally, having followed the story, I was completely unaware that Donald Trump, or that there was a view that Donald Trump had opened this door because he was bragging. The only thing that I was aware of was that the controversy came to light because that representative was there with the mother and heard the conversation. I was completely unaware.
Before that happened, last week,
okay,
Donald Trump, in comments to the press, I believe it was sort of impromptu, like he was at a thing and press was yelling questions at him. He said something to the effect of, I'm paraphrasing and going off memory, he said something to the effect of, I've called every Gold Star family and no other president has ever done that.
Okay.
Which then prompted the, you know, opened up the door for the press to go, well, that's not true. President Obama called Gold Star families and President Bush called families. Mm-hmm. This is something that all presidents have done. So it opened up that door. And then that opened up the door, I think, for an opportunistic moment for this representative to then run to the press and say, Donald Trump disrespected his mother.
So do you think that she would not have done that if it hadn't been for Donald Trump's comments the week prior?
Entirely possible. We'll never know.
Okay. Well, and that's what this whole thing is about. I mean, this whole situation is about perspective. It is the power of sort of selective hearing, regardless of, and I'll have to go back and look at and see what Donald Trump had initially said, because again, I hadn't even heard anything about his initial comments a week prior about it. I'd only heard about this particular instance. But there's this thing, you know, that especially in radio, called selective hearing. You hear what you want to hear. And from my perspective on this, I think that, one, there's a good chance that Donald Trump doesn't remember that he said what he said, or believes in his mind, in his recollection, that he said it differently. But let's take at face value that he did say what he said. First off, does anybody really question Donald Trump's patriotism? I mean, does anybody really think that he would have said those words in a condescending, to be disrespectful way? What I think, in my opinion, probably happened was, Donald Trump may have said those words, but I also think that that representative and that mom were no fans of Trump, probably didn't want to hear from Trump, and in the middle of when he was talking, were more than likely looking for any reason whatsoever to go and criticize him. And when you have that mindset and you hear certain words play out, context and rationale goes out the window. I mean, when you're looking for something to go after somebody on, you can see a statement like that and take it, even though that's not the way the person had said it. I just can't believe that it's a controversy that's dominating the headlines in and of itself. It's complete he said, she said at this point, and gets us nowhere.
And that's all it's going to be, is he said.
Yeah, there's no recording.
I doubt there's a recording or a transcript of the call.
They've already come out and said there isn't.
It's going to be a he said, she said, but the mother of the son has come out and essentially confirmed, not confirmed, but she has backed up the story that the representative has given, her version of the story. Now, they are longtime family friends, so who knows? I mean, who knows what happened? The tone of it, the context of it is very relevant, and we'll never know the tone and context of it.
651-989-5855. Use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter if you want to comment on this. We'll talk more about it. We do have a lot of audio coming up at 7:30. But next, we've been scouring the internet trying to find the things that we think Sam would have included in her top five.
We'll bring you Sam's maybe top five next, right here on Twin Cities News Talk.
Justice.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice Andrew, Brianne filling in for Sam. All right, so CBS. Okay, I went and found the. So in very Trump fashion, this is typical. All right, so I went to CBS News, went back to the Rose Garden presser where Trump initially made those comments. Here's what Trump said: taking a jab at Obama. The traditional way, if you look at President Obama and other presidents, most of them didn't make calls, talking about Gold Star families. A lot of them didn't make calls. I like to call when it's appropriate, when I think I'm able to do that. When he was pressed further,
He backtracked a little, saying, I was told that he didn't often, and a lot of presidents don't. They write letters. President Obama, I think, probably did sometimes, and maybe sometimes he didn't. I don't know. That's what I was told.
Yeah, and if you don't know,
all I can do,
keep your mouth shut.
All I can do, and all I can do is say, is ask my generals. Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters. Some presidents didn't do anything.
Yeah, and if you don't know, I mean, calling a Gold Star family is nothing to be braggadocious about. It's something you do with dignity. You do it behind the scenes. You don't. It's nothing that needs to go. You need to go out, run out, and talk to the press about. It's not appropriate.
I don't necessarily disagree, but if you're being asked in a presser about these comments, right? Could they be almost everything that Donald Trump says could be worded differently or perhaps better? Okay, it's not an excuse, but it is the way that he talks. The thing that I get annoyed over is, and this is not directly aimed at you, but what I get annoyed over is this sort of quasi-expectation that it should be any different with him. It's how he communicates. Like it or not, it's how he communicates. On its face,
and see, it's frustrating because he creates controversies where there don't need to be any.
See, and I look at it completely different. I look at something like that and go, that's on you. That's on the person who's taking those comments in and how they want to go and interpret them and how they want to view them, right? Could they be better? Of course. But I can look at those comments and go, yeah, I see what he was driving at. And I don't think that as him, a man, that he was trying to be braggadocious. He was asked a question and he was given an answer. I'm more annoyed over the fact that there is so much focus on this other controversy, which is clearly being perpetuated over this Trump derangement syndrome. The people upset over whether Trump did or didn't make these comments to the widow, what do they expect is going to happen? Like, Jamar on Twitter yesterday was being all just irrational and ridiculous in the middle of the show over this whole thing. You tweeting at me and, you know, being a disservice to veterans. Well, okay, what is it you want? What do you think is going to happen over this? The people that are complaining about this with Donald Trump, they already hate him. It's not changing anything. I know for them it's a validation in some way that he is a certain way, but it's not changing anybody. The whole thing is really stupid.
I don't hate Donald Trump.
Okay.
And I'm complaining about it. I think it's you know, I think he handled this poorly. And I think if you're, you know, I, for me, just speaking for myself,
sure,
you know, as someone who doesn't hate Donald Trump, wasn't my first choice to be president, glad he beat Hillary. You know, there are things about him that frustrate me. There are things about him that annoy me, and this is one of them. This tendency to sort of trip over his own words when he should know by now that everything he says is going to be misconstrued and everything he says is going to be spun very negatively by a majority of the press. It would be nice. I would appreciate it personally if he would be a little more discriminating in his words.
Okay.
And not say something like the former presidents didn't call Gold Star families when he admits that he doesn't even know if that's true.
Right.
You know, but he says it like it's, he states it like it's a fact, a statement of fact. And then he says, but I don't know if it's true. But that gives them the opportunity to run and say, well, President Obama did it this many times. President Bush did it this many times. And we've reached out to every Gold Star family that's lost a service member since you've been in office, Mr. Trump. And you've only called about half of them.
Yeah, and he's held accountable for what he says. When I see those comments, I get what Donald Trump is driving at. I don't like the way that he talks. I agree with you. I wish that he would pull back a little bit. But I'm also not looking at those comments on their face and getting, I'm personally not getting annoyed by them. I mean, if it had been the way that sort of it's described, I would have been. But when you look at these and he walks it back when he's pressed further, when somebody questions him on it and he says, oh, this is what I was told. Some do, some don't. I did. I do when I think it's appropriate. I personally don't have an issue with it.
Okay.
651-989-5855.
We have scoured the internet. We have found the top five stories that we assume would have floated Sam's boat this morning. She will be back on Monday. This is Sam's maybe top five for a Thursday.
Number one.
A first look at eight possible versions of President Donald Trump's border wall are now on display. workers out of San Diego.
How many versions do you need?
Well, you need the scariest one.
A wall is a wall.
What's not that is not true. A wall is not a wall. Out of Arizona Central, workers putting the final touches on 8 possible versions of Trump's long promised border wall. An October 26 deadline to put the finished prototype border wall designs is drawing closer. The Arizona Republic toured the construction site a few dozen yards from the border that divides the city from neighboring Tijuana. U.S. Customs and Border Protection awarded 8 contracts to 6 companies, including 2 from Arizona, to build the prototypes. 4 are made of reinforced concrete. Another 4 incorporate additional construction materials. At 30 feet, the designs dwarf the primary fence that currently marks the international boundary. It's made of rusted Vietnam War era landing mats. They're nearly twice the height of the secondary metal mesh fence, which ends near where the prototypes are being built. Their height, officials said, is intended to make a statement to criminals and would-be unauthorized crossers. So one of the division chiefs of the San Diego Border Patrol said the 30 feet was very impressive. What we're trying to accomplish is by putting tactical infrastructure on the border, by having all-weather roads, by putting Border Patrol agents on the immediate border is a deterrence.
And that's the key to me is, and I've said all along, you know, the key to better border control is human beings, is Border Patrol. You know, there are portions of the border where a wall might be necessary. I don't think we're ever going to have a wall that just extends the entirety of the border, and it's foolish to think so. But, you know, we should be hiring more Border Patrol. We should be staffing up the border with a lot more bodies. That's proven to be an effective deterrent.
The only place, in my view, where you don't put the wall is the places where the terrain doesn't allow for it. The rest of the border could have a wall on it. It needs to be tall. The one that's there now, they can actually drive up and over. They've done it before. And there's large swaths of it where you've got ranchers whose properties are wide open to it. So I think it's a combination. I want to see something done when it comes to enforcing all of our immigration laws in the country. I think that's the only way you're going to be able to get people fully on board with this. The bigger question that I have on the wall, look, samples are great, but what about the rest of it? I mean, okay, so we got a sample. We got the one we want. Trump picks the one that he wants. Hey, that one's good. I like the height. I like the color. I like the thickness. We're solid. Okay, well, now what do you do? Because there still has to be funding for it. There's still going to have to be paid for. Yeah.
651-995-8855. We are in the midst of Sam's possible top 5. Got a call from Rich in White Bear. Good morning, Rich.
Hey, good morning. Say, just a quick comment on Trump's comments. The number one thing to remember is how Trump hears the question also, because he's attacked so often. So when someone asks that, he naturally feels he has to go on the defensive. So by that, then he starts getting into all that minutia that some people would say he shouldn't get into. But because he's constantly on the defensive, I think he hears some of those questions and goes on the defensive. Make sense?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And I also think that there's a natural inclination for Trump, and this is just part of his personality, and it is who he is, and it's not going to change. I'm not complaining about it, but there's a natural inclination for Trump to be a little braggadocious. And in the context of this comment, if I'm remembering it correctly, and I'm going to try to find the audio in the next break, if I'm remembering correctly, he was simply asked about the 4 Americans that were killed during the ambush in Niger, right? And he said, in response to that, that he'd penned letters and planned to phone them later in the week. And then sort of unprompted, followed up with, and that's something that other presidents haven't done. And that's what sort of opened the whole door. That got the floodgates going.
And there's some truth to that statement.
Number 2.
We got a lawsuit alleging that the Minnehaha Academy contractors, quote, ran to save themselves and did not warn anybody about the gas leak before that tragic explosion. Lawsuit filed Wednesday alleges that CenterPoint Energy contractors ran to save themselves rather than warn people inside Minnehaha Academy about a gas leak that caused the explosion that leveled the building. The story's out of the Star Tribune. That explosion on August 2nd wounded 9, killed 2 people. people. One of the women that was killed in the blast was Ruth Berg. Her family has brought the lawsuit, naming CenterPoint Energy and Master Mechanical, the company that was contracted to move gas meters out of the building when the explosion occurred.
Yeah, I'm not. It's really unfortunate. I'm not completely surprised, and they'll have to go through the process of the investigation to find out exactly what happened. My recollection when we covered this before, this all happened like really fast. I mean, it all happened, quickly. And I wonder the workers may have done that, but at the same time, how aware were they of how sparsely populated the interior of the building was at the time? I mean, there's still a lot of questions involved. I mean, it's unfortunate, but there's still a lot to be investigated in this.
Well, the lawsuit alleges that that they made several critical mistakes that day that led to the explosion. They failed to close shutoff valves, disconnecting the supply line from the old meter that caused gas to flow into a confined pit area where it would accumulate and explode. Again, this is all according to the lawsuit. The workers, quote, immediately realized that explosive conditions existed, according to the lawsuit, and immediately evacuated the area. They say it could have easily been prevented. The lawyer that's representing Berg's family says it could have easily been prevented, but just by shutting off the gas stream.
Yeah, and
that's going to be the key.
Yeah, and you have to put in all the things that will be worked out and all the things that will be discussed are human nature. How does somebody react? What responsibility do they have to warn other individuals? How would you react in a similar circumstance? It's one of those stories. It's tragic across the board, and frustrating.
Right. But if we do find that there were some errors that were made on part of the workers that were going there, then there should be some accountability there.
Number three.
Out of the Associated Press, two-time Olympic medalist Michaela Maroney says that she was molested for years by a former USA gymnastics team doctor. Abuse, she said, that started in her early teens and continued for the rest of her competitive career. Now, of course, this is all, this is all coming to light because of the stories that we've seen just across the board in the media, especially over Harvey Weinscum. Mm-hmm. And now,
part of the hashtag Me Too.
And the hashtag Me Too. So you have circumstances now where individuals feel like they have the... I don't want to say the cover. I want to make sure I choose my words correctly.
They're empowered.
They're empowered to, and they feel like it's safe now to come out and discuss and disclose situations like this. Maroney posted a lengthy statement on Twitter describing the allegations of abuse against Dr. Harry Nasser, who spent 3 decades working with athletes at USA Gymnastics, but is now in jail awaiting sentencing after pleading guilty to possession of child pornography. Maroney is 21 now, says the abuse began while attending the U.S. national team training camp in the Sam Houston Forest north of Houston. Was 13 at the time. Nasser told her that she was receiving medically necessary treatment. He had been performing on patients for 30 years. And there's more details as to what she described and the abuse that took place that it's kind of unnecessary to knowing what had taken place. One particular night in Japan where he visited her hotel room where she had the comment of, I thought I was going to die that night.
Ugh, it's just so disgusting. So disgusting.
There's a story that this is out of the Pioneer Press this morning, Cottage Grove golf course owner. Golf course is for sale after judge ruled owner sexually harassed employees. We're going to see a lot of these stories now in the media because of, the Harvey Weinscum. And it really highlights how powerful the media is when the media gets selective on the stories they're going to cover. Because you wonder how often these stories do not get covered because it's one of those things that's difficult. They don't think that people are going to click on it. For me personally, this is a circumstance where I'm glad the media is putting these stories out there, even if they are stories they normally ignore, because it is giving the ability of people to feel empowered to get this abuse out in the open, because there's a big spotlight on it now.
Yep. And I'm not happy, but I'm glad that
if you're looking for a positive.
I'm glad that these women feel like it's a point now where they can come forward and they can tell their stories. What happened to Maroney here is absolutely disgusting. This is not the first time that we've heard allegations of things like that in the world of gymnastics, where you young girls get into it girls get into it at a very young age, and unfortunately that's an area that has attracted predators in the past.
And this is not to downplay, but just to use as an example, usually we go to the several years ago we had the rash of shark stories, mm-hmm. where it was like, where are all these shark attacks coming from? And you come to find out, oh no, these have been taking place forever, the media didn't cover it, and you kind of go, well, that's just silly and dumb. This is a circumstance where it's very similar. No, these things have been happening for a long, long time, and a lot of it's been hidden, and now that it is all coming to the surface, maybe there'll be, unfortunately, a lot more exposure to put as much of a stop to it as possible.
Number 4.
From the Pioneer Press, Vikings players rave about Teddy Bridgewater's first practice, but Mike Zimmer tempers expectations. That's as he is wont to do. Bridgewater returned to practice yesterday after a 14-month absence, and head coach Mike Zimmer sought to temper expectations, but that wasn't the case with the Minnesota players. Several lauded how Bridgewater performed, including tight end Kyle Rudolph, comparing him to Hall of Fame quarterback Joe Montana. Okay, all right, well, might be a bit much. Maybe I'm on Team Zimmer here. This is cool down a little bit.
Should chill out a bit.
Yeah, Joe Montana might be a stretch. Bridgewater was back after having suffered a torn left ACL and dislocated knee back in August of 2016. During the 20 minutes of the session that were open to the media, Bridgewater threw a few short passes and did some general warm-up work.
Hey, is it a circumstance where... two things here. One, on the Joe Montana comment. Joe Montana... in his prime, planted in 2017 football.
Okay.
Is he still as effective?
Yeah.
You see, yeah. You understand what I'm saying?
I think so.
You know, it's kind of like it's kind of like looking at a NASCAR driver racing a race car that was really good in the 80s, put him in a race car now, and it's a drastically different situation.
Yeah. But there's a lot of technology involved in that.
Sure.
Wouldn't apply. It's not exactly the same game, but the fundamentals are still the same.
Okay.
You know, and if you got the skill level that a Joe Montana had, could probably adapt to the differences in the style of play.
Is it a rougher game now than it was before, or has the NFL pulled that back and made it
it's less rough.
Less rough.
Right. It's a faster game than it was then. The players are all, you know, through the advances in technology associated with training and things like that, everybody's faster, everybody's stronger, and the average skill level in the NFL is probably significantly higher than it was in Joe Montana's day.
Okay.
But still, the fundamentals are the same, and when you've got someone who's got the level of skill, level of talent, intelligence that a Joe Montana-type quarterback has to have to be as good as he was, could probably adapt pretty well.
My other Joe Montana question, how many more years until references to Joe Montana become obsolete?
Oh, like, they kind of already are.
Okay, thank you. That's what I was kind of driving at. Like, I know for you, like Dan Marino, and like you hear,
he's
like Joe
Montana, quarterback of all time.
Yeah, you hear like Joe Montana, but you go like to the millennial or even just slightly older football fan. Yeah, Brianne.
You watch football?
But I know the name. Joe Montana, it rings. Yeah. All right. John Elway, you know, stuff like that.
All right.
But if somebody said, Brianne, who is the better quarterback in your mind based off of name alone, Tom Brady or, okay, hold on, I'll not use Tom Brady.
Yeah, he was a dud.
Aaron Rodgers or Joe Montana. Aaron Rodgers, Joe Montana, who you would say if you had to bet who the better quarterback is?
I don't know. In my mind, I guess I thought football maybe was a little harder these days. So I guess I would say Aaron Rodgers. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. I know nothing, I said. Prefaced it.
All right, coming up, we will get to the final number 5 of what we think would have been Sam's top 5 this morning. I also think that Drew's been scouring the internet looking for Trump audio. Speaking of audio, we have audio of the Mandalay Bay guard on the Ellen DeGeneres show, the security guard who alerted police. There's a takeaway from the Ellen DeGeneres story that falls right in line with the commentary that we had yesterday. Because this was the guy that disappeared on everybody. This was the guy that was supposed to do the interview with the media, and then he left.
Right.
And was like, where'd he go?
Showed up on Ellen.
Yeah, and so he's like, no, he traded
Hard
up.
Hitting Ellen DeGeneres.
Well, what's funny about it is that he did trade up. Because remember we were making the progression of where does he go from here? There was another show that he actually turned down to go on Ellen that I thought was kind of amusing. So we'll get to all that coming up on Twin Cities News Talk.
Justice City and 103.5 FM.
Want a pair of tickets to Culture in the Columns music series at James J. Hill Center for featuring Sean Johnson Big Band Experience? Register today at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
In the tail end of Sam's potential top five, what we think she would have scoured the internet and found this morning here on Twin Cities News Talk?
Yeah, we're going to wrap that up, and then we are going to be joined by Devin Foley from Intellectual Takeout just after the top of the hour. We're going to talk about the ongoing conversation about sort of trade schools, apprenticeships, vocational training versus traditional four-year degrees.
I also want to get his thoughts on Black and Orange Spirit Day.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a school that canceled Halloween. That's what they're going to celebrate.
Yeah.
Black and Orange Spirit Day.
That's ridiculous.
That's not a thing.
That's really dumb.
It's not a... We're celebrating...
Everybody wear your black and orange.
Black and orange.
Yeah, no.
Purple's off in the corner going, what about me? We're using purple now for Halloween.
Yeah, purple's too. Very popular.
Yeah, very popular.
First, let's wrap up Sam's possible top five.
Number five.
This is out of CBS. Pennsylvania. Lucy Tracasey, okay, has seen it all. She was born in 1905, and now she is celebrating her 112th birthday.
Wow, that's old.
Tracasey is the eighth oldest living person in America. Have you guys seen Minority Report? Tom Cruise?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Long time ago.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Just watched it again recently because I'm in that exposing my son to movies that I like, and which amounts to torture.
That's a lifetime
Blade Runner yeah. Minority
project.
Report.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little dark.
The amazing thing, though, is that I have an 11-year-old that I get to do it all over again here in a couple of years. But I feel like you get a Lucy Tracasey, right, 112, and the all eight of them together, and... I get the feeling that they could be like the precogs in Minority Report, where there's something special about the fact that they've been alive for so long. There's got to be some wisdom that they can impart on the rest of us, or just some vision that we don't see.
Yeah.
You know, she says that she's been alive this long because she never drinks coffee. She only drinks milk.
That doesn't seem like that should work. It feels like that
right?
Shouldn't be something. She says she still likes beer, though. So
she says she's willing to splurge on her birthday, plans to share a beer with a friend, right? Her love of beer probably developed during Prohibition when Tracasey and her family brewed 5-gallon crocks of beer to sell to her family and friends.
She's a criminal.
See, that's the wisdom, though, right there. Let's, you know, let's get some insight about Prohibition and how things were.
Yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, right? Well, and the perspective, right? You know, you guys are
all complaining, you know, about the way the world is. You don't know what difficulty it's like, you know.
112. I mean, think of how different the world is from
right?
when she was a teenager, right? She was born, she was born in what,
1905?
So she was a teenager in the 20s.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You know.
They were roaring from what I hear.
Crazy.
She says, when you've celebrated as many birthdays as Tracasey, you learn that the simpler things in life bring the most happiness. When asked what she wants for her birthday, she says,
get a 112-year-old.
Another year. Oh, I don't know what it would be. I have everything. I've been coast to coast, clear to California and back. I don't want anything. Yeah, I just, crazy.
Yeah.
There's got to be a level of, level of acceptance, right, at that point. You're kind of like, well, I'm just kind of chilling out, waiting for...
It'll happen eventually.
Yeah, just waiting to cross over. Just should be an interesting experience.
She's only number eight.
Right.
The eighth oldest.
I know. I'm telling you, man, we're missing an opportunity here. Because you can get them all together. They should be resourced. You know, they're collective minds.
You think there's something there?
I do. I don't know what. That's clear, because I don't really have any point to what I'm saying right now. But I just think when you have individuals that are in their 100s, there has to be some nugget of knowledge that we could glean before they do cross over.
Let's put them all in a room and see what happens.
Worth a crowdsource.
I'm going to guess if you do, not a lot.
I'll just be sitting there staring at each other. Eight strangers in a room.
Eight over 100 strangers in a room, just kind of, you know, that would probably actually be pretty boring, to be honest.
It's a good idea, though.
I know. It's a good thought.
Good effort. So we've been going back and forth a little bit regarding this controversy around Trump and the Gold Star families, which I just want to preface this by saying I think this is a ridiculous controversy, and it frustrates me that this is dominating the news anyway. This is not something that I think needs to be... It doesn't need to reach this level, and I do think that there's a level of opportunism that took place with this Florida representative to take advantage of the attention that it was getting.
Right.
And use this call that he made to this mother to try to score some political points. Whether the context of that call is ultimately a he said, she said. Right, you've got the representative and the mother saying that they were disrespected, and you got Trump saying it didn't happen. We're never going to know the real truth because we don't have the audio, we don't have the transcript.
No, we weren't there.
And we weren't there, right?
Right.
So I'm not even really so much concerned about that, but what frustrates me is that, you know, this is, in my opinion, a controversy that Trump opened up the door to himself. This is the audio from last week. When he initially first started talking about this. And the question is important because the question that was asked was, why haven't we heard from you regarding the four Americans who were killed in Niger? Right? And that's a legitimate question that any president would face from the press. That wasn't like an attack kind of question.
Why haven't we heard anything from you so far about the soldiers that were killed in Niger and what do you have to say about this?
I've written them personal letters. They've been sent or they're going out tonight, but they were written during the weekend. I will at some point during the period of time call the parents and the families because I have done that traditionally.
Everything fine so far.
I felt very, very badly about that. I always feel badly. It's the toughest calls I have to make are the calls where this happens. Soldiers are killed. It's a very difficult thing. Now it gets to a point where, you know, you make four or five of them in one day is a very, very tough day. For me, that's by far the toughest. So the traditional way, if you look at President Obama and other presidents.
And this is where he should have just stopped. Should have just stopped there. Like, I've written letters. I'm going to call him.
He could have.
He should have.
He could have.
And this is where he gets himself in trouble and opens up the door for the press to go out and start disputing things he says.
Most of them didn't make calls. A lot of them didn't make calls. I like to call when it's appropriate, when I think I'm able to do it. They have made the ultimate sacrifice. So generally, I would say that I like to call. I'm going to be calling them. I want a little time to pass. I'm going to be calling them. I have, as you know, since I've been president, I have. But in addition, I actually wrote letters individually to the soldiers we're talking about, and they're going to be going out either today or tomorrow.
Earlier you said that President Obama never called the families of fallen soldiers. How can you make that claim?
I don't know if he did. No. I was told that he didn't often, and a lot of presidents don't. They write letters. I do. Excuse me, Peter. I do a combination of both. Sometimes it's a very difficult thing to do, but I do a combination of both. President Obama, I think probably did sometimes, and maybe sometimes he didn't. I don't know. That's what
if you don't know, then don't bring it up. Why'd you bring him up? If he had never said the words President Obama in the initial statement, none of this would be going on.
I honestly
don't know. Don't bring it up.
I honestly have no problem with how
looking at the film after the game. Is there anything that stands out to you now?
I have no problem with how he addressed it. I have no problem with him bringing up the other aspect of what he was told or what he thought. And I'm listening to him. I'm hearing him sound very genuine about making those phone calls. That is how Trump speaks. That is how he handles these types of things. Does he have to? He doesn't have to. But at the same time, when I hear that, right? Like, if I heard that apart, like when I read that right earlier, I didn't read anything into it. I feel like it's coming from a genuine place. He was asked again by the press about the comment that he made that they felt was wrong. He clarified his statement. And look, it's for me, I relate to him, and I've always said this, I relate to him like a talk show host like me, right? I know he's the president. I don't have any expectation that he's going to talk any differently. But I also know that when you are in the middle of talking to somebody, explaining something, there are times when you go and you make comments. And when you're asked about those comments to clarify, you have to clarify. So I personally don't see that at all as being braggadocious in any way, shape, or form.
Well, my whole point, though, is by bringing up President Obama and comparing yourself to him, it was unnecessary. And that's when the door opened, and that's when it allowed the press to go out and say, all right, well, let's compare and let's see how many times President Obama called compared to how many times President Trump has called. It has blown up into a stupid, fake, unimportant controversy that every outlet now is covering ad nauseum. That frustrates me.
You could make the argument that the comments even before he mentioned Obama were unnecessary. You can make that argument. And the second part is, in Trump's world, it doesn't matter. You know, I firmly believe that even if he hadn't made those comments and that situation had happened with the widow and the Gold Star family and went down, that still would have ended up coming to the forefront regardless of what he said today. He's never going to be able to win with the media. And even if he hadn't made those comments, they probably would have found something else to go and give him a hard time about when he said it. So that's just the lens at which I look through. I look through comments and when he makes statements like that.
Joining us next, we're going to be pleased to be joined by Devin Foley from Intellectual Takeout. We're going to continue the ongoing conversation that we've had about alternatives to traditional four-year degrees, and the efforts to promote them has run into some roadblocks in D.C.
Yeah, out of the Star Tribune, the efforts to champion those four-year degrees are not gaining traction the way that many would like. I mean, this includes Franken and Lewis on this, so we're going to get Devin Foley, his thoughts on this. And also the 18 Dems that are suing DeVos over blocking Obama for profit college rule. We haven't talked about that yet. We'll get his thoughts on that as well.
Broadcasting on AM 1130, 103.5.